On Sunday, January 11th at 11 p.m., in honor of the 11th Annual Winter Jazz Festival, Shagir Mabol revisits pianist, composer, bandleader, educator, and Guggenheim Fellow, Jerry Allen. Join us as we revisit a program which originally aired in 2009 with our special co-host, Farah Jasmine Griffin. That's Sunday, January 11th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. Listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. Shagir Mabol is the name of this program. This is actually a rebroadcast of a 2009 program that features Miss Jerry Allen, who was at the Winter Jazz Festival this past Friday night. And she played with David Murray. It was David Murray, Terry Lynn Carrington, Jerry Allen. The rebroadcast features our special guest co-host, Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin. Stay tuned. Shagir Mabol coming up now.
Maybe I can fix things up so they'll go. What's the matter, Daddy? Come on. Save my soul. I want some sugar in my bowl. I ain't fooling. I want some sugar. Thank you.
La 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 Thank you. shot is your neck. La, 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 la,
Listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. That was Miss Betty Carter, and you're listening to Sugar in My Bowl is the name of this program. My name's Joyce Jones, and what we just heard, I have guests in the studio, and we'll get to them in a moment, but just to let you know what you've just heard, it was the title cut from a live recording with Miss Betty Carter, Feed the Fire, which was also written by our guest. Okay, our guest is Jerry Allen. Miss Jerry Allen, composer, pianist, arranger, professor, and much more. We'll talk to her and our guest co-host, Farrah Jasmine Griffin, in a moment. And that was a live recording from the Royal Festival Hall in London, released in 1993.
And what you heard before was The Eye of the Hurricane by Herbie Hancock. That's from Maiden Voyage, the 1965 Blue Note Records release, which has Freddie Hubbard on trumpet, George Coleman on tenor saxophone, Herbie Hancock on piano, Ron Carter on bass, and Tony Williams on drums. Jerry Allen likes Herbie Hancock.
And before that, we heard, let's see, I think I'm going to mess up here, Melchizedek. Okay. And that was from Miss Allen's most recent recording, Timeless Portraits and Dreams, released in 2006. And that was Miss Jerry Allen with the Atlanta Jazz Chorus, directed by Dwight Andrews. Actually, let me back up. I didn't let you know who was on Feed the Fire. That was Jack DeJohnette on drums, and Dave Holland on bass, and of course, Miss Jerry Allen on piano. And on Timeless Portraits and Dreams. Just so you know, some of the artists that are on this release. It's Ron Carter on bass, Jimmy Cobb on drums, and Wallace Roney on trumpet. Let's see, we have Donald Walden on tenor sax, and that's on some recordings. And you can find this recording, it's on the Telarc label, Telarc Jazz label. And let's see, before that we heard I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, which is the theme for this show, Sugar in My Bowl, by Nina Simone. This particular recording was from a compilation, Sugar in My Bowl, The Very Best of Nina Simone, released in 1998. And right now I'd like to welcome Ms. Jerry Allen and Ms. Farrah Jasmine Griffin.
Hello.
Hello. And thank you for joining us this evening. Thank you for joining Sugar in My Bowl.
Thank you.
And we were having this great conversation while we were listening to the set. For starters, tell me about your experience with Betty Carter. What was that like for you?
Well, I first met Betty in Pittsburgh. I was studying at the university, and she came in town to do a concert, and her piano player did not show up for the sound check. So somebody said that I could do the sound check for her, and she said, well, come up here. And so I did, and she did her sound check, and I really was excited to have a chance to be that close to her. And then the next day, she did a panel, and she invited me to sit on the panel. It was about women's concerns in jazz. And I was honored that she invited me. And then after that, I think through the years, I guess after I actually came to New York, I guess that would have been another 2 years or so, she ended up being such a real bridge for me into the community of musicians there because of her endorsement. And I ended up doing a record with her, Dropping Things, and did some duo concerts with her. And she managed me for a number of years, and that's how I met Ora Harris.
Yes, I noticed you had the same management.
Mm-hmm. It was Bette Carr Productions at the time, and Ora, you know, and I still remain great friends, and she's been my stability through this very unstable business. And I ended up doing this record with Betty, and she said that she wanted to name the record Feed the Fire. And I was like, wow, wee, that's amazing. And we were on tour with Jack and Dave and recorded throughout the tour. And this particular concert was the one that the company chose to represent the you know, the tour we'd done together.
Oh, okay.
It was a thrill working with her. She was a grand diva.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she controlled each room that we played in, no matter how big or how small. You heard the people, you know, clapping as, you know, the music started. She was walking out on the stage. And she would just, you know, take people into her arms. By the end of the concert, everybody was smiling, and, you know, that's what she said was the test as to whether you had done a good performance.
Excuse me.
As to whether the people were smiling at you or not.
Mm.
She said another way to tell would be the staff. If the staff were angry and walking around, you know that you hadn't done a good job. Mm. If they were smiling and happy, and, you know, they had gotten good tips, you know, then you had done a good job. So, but she was a great artist, and a very fearless artist. Yeah. She would try things that, like giant steps, you know, things that you have to hear those intervals before you can sing them. You know, or certain instruments, you have to hear the note first before you can put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
Piano, you know, it's more direct. I mean, I know mathematically what's going to work, Doesn't always work because the X Factor remains. But with the voice, you have to hear those notes first. Mm. And with pieces like that, that really is risky to get out there and do something that advanced. And she was doing that. You know, we were out there doing very challenging music. And she was jumping out there and, as you could hear, keeping everybody on their toes.
Sure.
So, plus working with Jack and Dave, of course, was a thrill.
Mm. What did you, I mean, I'm sure there were many things you learned from her, but if you had to think about what you learned both musically and also in terms of leading a band, what would you say you got from Betty Carter?
Well, she was a very fair-spirited person. She would be hard on you, but she was hard on everybody. So it was a question of the music. That was really if the music was being served, then she was having fun. If it was something going wrong, then she wasn't going to hang out in that wrong space. You know, she was not going to be in that. It was like you're going to get it together now, or you know, somebody's not going to be here, and I'm going to be here. So, you know, and that was really great training ground for musicians. It was great. She wasn't the only one that was like that. I mean, any of the major band leaders at the time, the expectation was very high. I mean, Art Blakey's bands, that expectation was very high, and he would embarrass you on the bandstand as well. So it was just a question of, I think, a different time. I'm not sure what shifted, but I think young musicians had to come through bands to prove themselves. And it was very high level of competition to get in those bands because, you know, there were a certain amount of seats in the band. And then everybody wanted that. So when you got in there, you had to really be ready to be in there. And then you had to maintain it because there were always other people in the wings waiting for that chair, you know, if something go wrong. But I also think, people were willing to accept the master's wrath, so to speak, to have the honor of being there. And I think it feels to me as though, you know, those times are, it's not that way so much anymore.
I was just going to ask you about that, because it when I met you, that was one thing I really wanted to discuss with you. You were with Farrah at Columbia University, and you had taught a series of master classes and workshops, and then you performed. And that was something that seemed to be, well, something I've noted as well, that the clubs, you know, the bands, the leaders that have young people in their bands or just have that opportunity to do that, it seemed as though the only opportunity to teach someone was in the college. Is that something?
You mean today?
Yes, today.
Oh, today.
Excuse me.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. Well, I think the question of culture comes up, you know, and how we learn music, and we've always learned music through the culture. It's always been like your responsibility to get into the spaces where the music was. In other words, you went to where the music was, and you were happy to do that because you wanted to learn. So I think because the music is so much in the university now, there's a lot of discussions just about the idea of culture remaining a focal point of how we learn, and having, you know, the young musicians being aware of the history and the culture and that produced the music, and the fact that, you know, it comes from a very serious experience, a group of people, a very intense series of experiences, and music evolved to where it is today. And I think that we have to continue to make sure that people understand that and embrace that. Mm-hmm. And by doing so, they will stay connected to the roots of the culture and, you know, to the musicians who are responsible for the music evolving. So music and culture, I think, have to stay the focal point in terms of how we learn in the universities.
I also noticed in the universities, as far as how music is taught, and it depends on who it is, I guess, it's almost as though there's certain types of artists that are focused on, or certain periods in that artist's development, like, say, Miles Davis, for instance. Mm-hmm. Farrah, you had written a book about Miles mm-hmm. Davis and John Coltrane. And both Miles Davis and John Coltrane had gone through transitions. And I noticed with your music, Jerry Allen, that you expand. You're not limited to a particular type. You expand and you grow, as most musicians do. But from what I understand in universities, there's a small focus on the development of the artist. Is like you can learn Dixieland, you know, as far as jazz is concerned, there's Dixieland, or mm-hmm. there's this period up to 1966, and anything that happened in the 70s is not jazz. So
it sounds like a movie I saw. Yeah, I was gonna say it sounds more like film than film I saw.
So that doesn't happen in the universities. There's definitely more.
I think it depends,
you know,
on where. I'm sure. Well, you're in the university,
well,
right?
Yeah, I'd like
right?
to hear your comment.
So I think it certainly depends on where you are and who's teaching. I mean, that it's likely that, you know, I think it's not just university. It's the kind of institutionalization of the music mm-hmm. in different ways that forces a kind of more narrow conception of it, when we know that this music is so expansive, and you pick any one of those artists mm-hmm. and to try to pin them down to any one given period is just really a travesty. So Jerry's teaching in the university, I can't imagine that your students would be limited to any one particular.
No.
Yeah.
And I think, again, I'm at Michigan, University mm-hmm. of Michigan. Mm-hmm. We have a very, you know, keen interest in, I have to say, I have a group of piano students that are really exciting. I'm watching them advance, and they're advancing based on the same criteria that, you know, jazz musicians have advanced, you know, advanced on since the beginning of the music, which is the acknowledgement of the ones that came before and the study of that. And, you know, through transcription and analysis and really learning those solos and dissecting what those great artists did as a roadmap to how to learn how to play. Mm. And they're also going after, you know, trying to hear the music as much as they can in live settings. The same thing. Right. It's very clear roadmap to how you learn to play the music. And I think as long as you, for me, I've seen my students really grow under that same criteria that, you know, that I learned under, that people that I learned from learned under. And so, I mean, I don't know if I'm answering your question, mm-hmm. but, you know, I really do feel that jazz is alive and well, and I hear some really brilliant students. We were just talking about a master class I did at Columbia.
Right.
And these students are, you know, very fine players mm-hmm. at very young ages. So, I mean, I think they understand that process is about doing it the way Sonny Rollins did it,
mm-hmm.
doing it the way Miles Davis did it, doing it the way Mary Lou Williams did it, you know. And kind of that's the way I teach.
I'm actually glad you mentioned Mary Lou Williams. And I know you're Farrah, there's something you hear.
No, I hear this lush light
in know.
The background.
I saw
so
you
beautiful.
Pick up the CD.
Yeah.
As I picked up your copy, shall I say. Mary Lou Williams, is there something that you'd like to do or have done with her music?
Well, we recorded her Zodiac Suite.
Okay.
Under the umbrella of the Mary Lou Williams Collective.
Okay.
And we're hoping to record her masses and some of the other unrecorded works through Father O'Brien and the Mary Lou Williams Foundation, mm-hmm. who, you know, continue to get her music out there to young people. Mm-hmm. And to, you know, she's got a great big band music mm-hmm. that we're trying to get around to universities so that these young people can hear this music that was very modern then, and it still sounds really fresh and modern now. And it's very wonderful writing, music she wrote for Benny Goodman's band and Andy Kirk, and you know, Duke Ellington used the Scorpio as one of his mainstays in his book. And so there's a lot more music we're trying to get out there to colleges and high schools,
okay.
and also hopefully to get some of these other masses recorded as well.
Now, you had mentioned a recording, of Mary Lou Williams' music that you're trying to get out. Is there a scheduled release for that, or?
Oh,
is
no,
it?
But I hope you'll let me come back when.
Okay.
When
okay.
But you
definitely.
Did do the Zodiac Suite.
We yeah, have recorded yes. the Zodiac yeah. Suite. Mm-hmm. That's been out for, you know, 2 years now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's still available.
Okay.
And
yeah.
If you go to the website, it's a wonderful body of work mm-hmm. that she had recorded, and we were fortunate enough through, again, Father O'Brien and, mm-hmm. and finding these documents of her compositions okay. to, you know, I went and transcribed just to listen back through again and to match the scores that I had mm-hmm. and just to fill in some of the blanks in terms of things that were not all in the score with the music of, you know, her performance okay. of it. And with Buster Williams, and we had Billy Hart, and we had Andrew Cyril and Andy Bay.
Oh, okay.
These great musicians come together to record the Zodiac. And there's another part of it, a second release that we're looking forward to doing.
Oh, okay.
We did the whole Zodiac, but we also did some other, mm-hmm. Like... Andy Bay did St. Martin de Porres and Medi Medi, one of her pieces, Busy, 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 mm. some things, I think Miss Dee Dee. And so hopefully that'll be out, I'm not sure when, but
okay.
in the next year or so, I'm hoping that, you know, Father O'Brien's talking about putting that one out as well.
Now, website, what is the website?
The Mary Lou Williams Foundation.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Let me just look it up. Just look it up.
Did you... you came to New York after she had passed away, so you never had a chance to meet her or interact with her, did you, with Mary Lou?
No, but I did get to hear her play mm-hmm. in Washington when I was at Howard.
Mm-hmm.
But I, having gone to Pittsburgh, had a lot of opportunities through the musicians there that had stories about her and loved her very much. I did some research on her starting in those years. And that's how I connected with Father O'Brien.
What was it that drew you to her music in particular? I mean, especially, you know, both as a player and as a composer, what was it that you found challenging or attractive about her music?
Well, her playing, very virtuosic independence between the right and left hands, mm-hmm. and her ability to span... the whole history of the piano. I was, I'm still in awe of that. And there are, you know, there's a video of her teaching a history class that she taught at Duke. And her playing, she was able to demonstrate every era of the piano. And as I'm listening to her, and I'm now teaching a history class as well, it's very interesting to me. And maybe it's just because I'm a piano player, and you know, but, you know, you hear the piano in so many different aspects of how rhythm kind of developed throughout mm-hmm. the music, from ragtime on up to, you know, the modern shift, you know. The piano became less left hand, and that you know, no longer using the left hand and the bass really taking over much of that that whole role the piano play. But it just seems to have been a pivotal instrument in terms of, you know, just the structure of the rhythm throughout, you know, the history of the music. And you can really hear that in her, you know, as you're listening to her command of all of those different eras.
All right. Well, you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, Sugar My Bowl. We're having a wonderful conversation with Jerry Allen and my special, extra special co-host, Farrah Jasmine Griffin. And gosh, I feel so bad talking over this wonderful music. This is from The Life of a Song that was recorded by Jerry Allen. But I just... it's so comfy. Oh, by the way, the Mary Lou Williams site is www.marylouwilliamsfoundation.org. www.marylouwilliamsfoundation.org. And yes, you can find out about the Zodiac Suite Revisited, which we were just discussing. So...
Well, Jerry, you played in a lot of different... I mean, you were talking about Mary Lou Williams being able to span this long history of the music and the piano. But, I mean, you've played in so many different kinds of settings and different kinds of, you know, with different kinds of musicians. And, you know, I think it's hard to categorize you. I mean, you're straight ahead. You're doing stuff that's more out. How do you select the kinds of settings that you want to play in? Like, you know, is it... there are people that you want to work with, there's a particular kind of music that you're hearing at any given time. How do you make those decisions, those aesthetic decisions?
Hmm. Well, as a musician in coming into New York in the 80s, I was working with Mary Wilson, and she was my stabilizer.
Now, this is Mary Wilson from the Supremes?
Yeah.
Okay. Just to make
yes,
clear.
Yes. Detroit, Mary Wilson from the Supremes.
Uh-huh. Your homegirl, Mary yes. Wilson from the Supremes.
Okay.
So that was a really great gig to have. You know, coming into New York, really not having made any major connections as of yet. I have to back up. When I first came here, it was really Dwight Andrews, our good friend, who introduced me to Oliver Lake, who was a major, very important bridge for me to New York. And he was doing his jump-up band at the time. So I came in and I did that record date with him, which was very... wonderful to come into New York that way. Mm-hmm. And after that, I didn't work again for some time. Mm-hmm. And I realized that that was maybe not a realistic way to see life, coming in with such a great opportunity right away. But Mary Wilson was needing a piano player at the time, and so I worked with her for about 6 months after I had moved to New York. And I started getting calls after that from, you know, musicians like Arthur Blight, and I got calls from Lester Bowie, and you know, and they were calls that were sustainable. I mean, I was going to be able to work enough to sustain myself. So I gave Mary Wilson my, how do you say?
Notice.
My notice. And I thanked her for, you know, all the great lessons in how to do makeup and letting me wear the sequins tops and ride in the limo with them. And oh, it was really wonderful. And play those songs and sing the backup, you know, all those songs, Love Bug and oh. I love those songs.
And you got to sing.
Yeah.
Actually, I was just going to ask whether you ever sang.
Yeah, I sang back up with the Supreme, honey.
Okay.
Yes. So that was a great experience, but I really came to New York to be a jazz musician, and I could have continued working with Mary, which was really stable because she was always working. But I'm very fortunate to have had enough sustainable work through those really wonderful musicians. Mm-hmm. And that was my beginnings of being here. So throughout those early years, I was just grateful to, I was just grateful to work. Mm-hmm. And coming up in Detroit, Marcus Belgrave and those wonderful musicians like Donald Walden, and it was always clear that if you were working as a musician, you were very fortunate, and that you needed to be versatile. So I was trying to do every kind of gig that was making itself available to me at the time. You learn something from each of these different settings, and I think that they all inform your journey, in some kind of way. So I wasn't really selecting at that time. I was waiting to be chosen.
Right.
And grateful when the calls came in.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for January 11th. In this segment of the show, we bring you area listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can experience them live. This week's show features an interview with pianist Jerry Allen, done by special guest host Columbia University's Dr. Farah Jasmine Griffin. She has no immediate area shows, but will pass on info for later appearances. And we have other live music this week. The big news is a memorial and life celebration of the late bassist Charlie Hayden at the Town Hall on January 13th with Ruth Cameron Hayden, the Hayden Triplets, guitarist Pat Metheny, harpist Brandy Younger, and many others. Admission will be free, and details are at the Town Hall website at thetownhall.org. That's thetownhall.org. And it's the very last call for tickets to see vocalist Catherine Russell and master drummer Michael Carvin at Mohonk Mountain House's Jazz on the Mountain from January 16th to 19th. Go to wbgo.org for details and take a look for the events link there. Pianist Mark Carey leads his focus trio at the Cell Theater on January 17th. Details are at thecelltheater.org. And that's theater, spelled the English way, T-H-E-A-T-R-E. Dr. Leonard Jeffries will have a birthday celebration on the 18th at Harlem's National Black Theater from 4 to 9 p.m. Admission's free, but be prepared to make a donation. You can call 201-837-1355 for details. That's 201-837-1355. And you can look for the event on Facebook or just go to our blog. Pianist Vijay Iyer has a residency at the Stone from January 20th to 25th. Bassist Reggie Workman joins him on the 20th and 25th. Details are at thestonenyc.com. That's thestonenyc.com. Pianist Onaje Allen Gums is at Sister's Place in Brooklyn on the 24th. See sistersplace.org for details. That's Sisters, spelled S-I-S-T-A-S, place.org. Harpist Brandy Younger is at Minton's in Harlem on the 25th. See mintonsharlem.com for info. That's Minton's with an S, harlem.com. Looking ahead, you can catch multi-instrumentalist Charles Gale on saxophone, bass, and piano with guitarist Mark Ribot at the Stone on the 28th. Details are at thestonenyc.com. Also on the 28th, keyboardist John Medeski is at the Village Vanguard. Go to villagevanguard.com for info on that show. Finally, looking even further ahead, saxophonist Pharoah Sanders will be at Jazz at Lincoln Center's Dizzy's Club from January 29th to February 1st. See jalc.org for details. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, you can see the listings at the Sugar in My Bowl blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click the link for the blog. Tonight's playlist and audio from this and previous shows are on the website as well, as is our special coverage of the Winter Jazz Fest. If you like what we do here, help WBAI stay on the air by pledging whatever you can and consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. See the Support WBAI link on our website to find out more. This is Hank Williams signing off. With our bi-weekly schedule, we're off the airwaves next week, but we'll have updated event listings online and be back on air on Sunday, January 25th. Either way you connect, we'll see you next time on the Bandstand.
That's right. As our associate producer Hank Williams mentioned, we will be back on the 25th of January. Stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl and our 2009 rebroadcast of a program with Jerry Allen. We will have Miss Jerry Allen back here sometime this year because she's done so much more since then. As a matter of fact, Jerry Allen has been added to the tribute to Charlie Hayden. And Sugar guest Joe Daly is part of the Liberation Music Orchestra that will also be at the tribute for Charlie Hayden this Tuesday at Town Hall. Stay tuned.
Hi, this is Christian McBride, and you're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
And it wasn't until, I guess, later in the later 80s that I started to try to do more things as a leader myself. We did a concert at the Greenwich House, and I paid for the house, and I tried to, you know, I think it was E.L. James, he was an actor, that co-produced the concert with me. And, you know, we paid the musicians minimal fee, and they played my music, and that was my first band as gig as a leader in New York.
And when was that? When was that event?
Oh, you know, 80, maybe 86, something like that, 87.
Oh. Actually, how did you wind up playing piano, period?
I was attracted to it from having seen it on the young people's concerts. And I was drawn to the instrument. I remember the television show. It was Leonard Bernstein.
Yes.
And I can't remember the piece. I was really young, so I don't remember what the piece was. But it was just the way it looked and the sound of it. I knew from that that was an instrument I wanted to study. And my parents were really very supportive, and they went out and got a piano.
Wow.
And my brother and I took piano lessons. Mm. At the time, I mean, a lot of people had pianos in the house, so it was, it wasn't something that you would see often in my neighborhood. But it was a big expense, and I was very, very grateful to have the lessons.
Was there a lot of jazz in the house, or what was your journey to playing jazz?
Well, you're right. There was a lot of jazz in the house because of my father, mm-hmm. who is a huge fan of the music today still. Charlie Parker is his favorite. Mm-hmm. And
actually, all three of us, our fathers, brought us to jazz.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Yes. And we have to share the story then. I want to hear your versions, too. Yeah, but my dad talked a lot about Charlie Parker, and he took a friend, he said, to see Billy Eckstein, and he said he would never take a girl to see Billy Eckstein again. He said that was one of the worst mistakes he'd ever made. But, he had great records. He had Sarah Vaughan and Milt Jackson and Duke Ellington. And the way that these people looked on the covers, mm-hmm. I mean, it was just, drew you in. And then, of course, the music was in the house all the time. So that's really He's really the one that is responsible for my love in the music.
Well, I want to take a little music break. Just to let everyone know they're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. It's the Sugar in My Bowl. I'm on with Miss Jerry Allen and my extra special guest co-host, Farrah Jasmine Griffin. And let's listen to some more Jerry Allen.
Into tomorrow's world, let joy and love run free, and hope replace the memory of times when grief and strife were part of a world of painfully unfulfilled dreams. Let's hold on to our dreams. Dreams flow. Pure liquid bridges transporting us to tomorrow's world. Bridges transporting us to tomorrow. Dreams floating streams, water purifies and makes a bridge to transport us to a new tomorrow in a world where joy and love run free. To our dreams. Dreams are floating streams, bridges, peace and love are lives connected. In times of strife are lives connected. Floating streams and timeless portraits with warmth and passion have been fashioned. Peace and love in prayer connected. In times of strife our lives connected. Notes and poems in joy and wonder, with gratitude and pure intention.
In times of strife, our lives. Thank you. my baby's gone away. Went to, she didn't stay. Now what am I gonna do? Cause I just can't hide my foolish pride. Baby, I'm still in love with you. Why don't you drop a line? Tell me you're doing fine. My days are oh so blue. Cause I just can't hide my foolish pride. Baby, I'm still in love with you. Why did you leave? Why make me grieve? Am I to suffer this way? Will I ever grieve a sigh? Please, please, darling, won't you try to believe me when I say I was wrong? Dark shadows haunting me, nothing but misery. I can't escape, it's so true. Cause I just can't hide my foolish pride. Maybe I'm still in love with you. In love with you. To suffer this way. Please, darling, won't you try? Will I ever breathe a sigh? Please believe me when I say I was wrong. Dark shadows haunting me. Nothing but misery. I can't escape, it's so true. Cause I just can't hide my foolish pride. Baby, I'm still in love with you.
of twilight time. Steals across the meadows of my heart. Stars climb. Always reminding me that we'll pass. You wander down the lane. Oh,
nightingale tells his fairy tale. A paradise where roses bloom. Though I dream.
And you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. And my name's Joyce Jones, and you're listening to Sugar in My Bowl. My guest, special guest tonight is Miss Jerry Allen. And my extra special co-host for the evening is Farrah Jasmine Griffin. And I have to confess, I don't know if I mentioned it, but when I was introduced to Jerry Allen at Columbia, when Miss Allen was doing the workshops, there was a special concert, and Farrah Jasmine Griffin was had a discussion with Miss Allen, and that was my introduction. Well, reintroduction. I had first stumbled upon Jerry Allen at the Charlie Parker Jazz Festival. And in doing the research for this, it's as though I've been under a rock somewhere, which is probably how everybody else is feeling right now. A lot of other people are feeling, I can't say everybody, but I know that I felt like as I was doing the research, where have I been? Why don't I know of Jerry Allen more? And I'm just grateful I know now. So
I think I feel like I've been a Jerry Allen junkie for a long time, and I can credit a very good friend of mine who was writing an article about the group M-Bass, and I would come down to New York from New Haven and hang out with him, and we'd go to the kind of collective performances, and then we'd go to the individual performances of different people, and I remember the first time I heard Jerry by herself was at this little club somewhere in the village. I didn't know New York very well at the time, but just sitting there, and you might have been playing, maybe you were playing with a trio. I don't remember there being very many people on stage with you, but that would have been like 1988, maybe, something like that. Because I can remember the apartment I was living in. I remember the apartment I left to come hear Jerry Allen. And I've been a fan ever since, you know, just collecting the music, anything, the individual recordings with you as a leader, the stuff that you did with, like what we're listening to with Betty Carter and other people. And it's just been such a great growth experience when you follow an artist and, you know, listen to them evolve and grow and change. And And, you know, we were talking earlier, not limit people to any one way of being, but grow with them.
Right.
And so it's really been an extraordinary experience doing that. And then, who knows, I get to know her, too, on top of it. So it's a real treat, real treat.
Well, it's my good fortune to know you, Farrah. And she's such an important scholar of the music and part of a really important group of really brilliant people who are talking about the music in the way that it deserves to be talked about, and giving us another level of accuracy we haven't really necessarily had access to. So it's my pleasure to know you and to be a witness to this time, because it's a shift happening, and I think it's, you know, really important for us to just kind of watch it, because we're watching history unfolding.
And we've had some, you know, it's just been fun talking with Jerry about it and chances to collaborate, share ideas and things. So it's really to love an artist and her music and then get the opportunity to work with her is wonderful. You're going to be doing some, we have some things to look forward to, right? We've been listening to Jerry, mm-hmm. But we have some things to look forward to. You've got a CD coming out in the fall, maybe?
Right, we have a new CD coming out on Motema Records, which is a soul piano work called Refractions. And it's a commission. It was forged by a commission from the Guggenheim Foundation. And Farah has been good enough to do the liner notes and for the project. Mm-hmm. So I'm very excited about that. And next year we'll be touring the piece, and Carrie Mae Weems, the great photographer, is also going to be collaborating. So I feel like it's a really intense, you know, woman power record.
How perfect for March.
Well, you're so good at collaborating with different kinds of people. I know that the last few times I've seen you, you've been working with this phenomenal young dancer, Maurice Chestnut,
yes.
Right? And I wanted to know if you could just tell us, and it's not the first time you've worked with a dancer. You've worked with a tap dancer before, haven't you? So
right.
How did you decide that was something you wanted to incorporate into the music?
Well, again, Detroit, my roots in Detroit, I think a lot of things always go back to that. And coming up in Detroit, people were still dancing to bebop when I was laying in the clubs, and so... That was exciting to see people get up and move to that music.
Yeah.
And there were a group of dancers called the Sultans, tap dancers there. And Lloyd Story was one of those artists. And I just remember him being willing to perform on one of my records. And that would have been in 86, I believe, a record called In the Middle. That we did, and he tapped on it. And at that moment, you know, I mean, I had done some dancing as a younger, you know, as a kid, and I was doing tap dancing, but I really understood tap to be like percussion, you know, and the dance itself, you know, has a real parallel motion with the evolution of it's really jazz. It's the same lineage. It's the same rhythm and attitude, and you know, the lope. Mm-hmm. It's all the same music. And I met this young dancer through my daughter, who was taking some classes at Sharon Miller's in Montclair. And I you know, I said, well, this would really be. This is something I have wanted to do live for a long time. I even had a band called Timeline that I took to Europe about 5-6 years ago. But at the time, I couldn't get my agent to visualize the idea of a tap dancer, you know, as a part of the band. But we went anyway and did the tour with the group without the tap dancer. So I've been really trying to make this happen for a long time, for people to see it as a, you know, not a necessarily like he's a show, you know, not band and show. It's really, he's integrated into the music as a percussionist. Mm-hmm. So we call him Tap Percussionist. That's how he's listed everywhere. And this young man, my drummer, Casa Overall.
I was just going to ask you about him.
The two of them together, it's really like watching, you're talking about how Mary Lou spans that whole legacy. Well, these kids, Casa's like us in the sense that his parents were the ones who turned him on to jazz. Mm. So he's a baby that heard the music from the womb as well. And when he plays like that, you know, he has that old spirit in his playing and that feeling and that touch. And so they can go from that all the way to hip-hop.
To hip-hop, yes.
And back in a seamless way. So it's really exciting and fun.
And that was demonstrated at the Schomburg.
Yeah,
it was definitely, it was wonderful.
If any of your listeners haven't seen us, they'd be on the lookout for it, because
definitely.
It is just, you know, and the audience just so appreciates it. You
yes.
know, it's just a really great experience to hear that.
And I'd just like to acknowledge, as we're talking about this, Miss Jessie Norman, who we were all saying how much we would love to be at her performance this evening. But she liked him when she heard him at the Vanguard with us, which was the first time the Tap had ever been in the Vanguard.
Wow.
And the proprietor, Lorraine Gordon, really, really loved him. Yeah. And it was... I think a moment that was really great timing for him, because he performed with in the honors performance last week at St. John's.
At St. John's, the series of performances that Jessie Norman is curating.
Yes,
she used him.
That's wonderful.
It is.
Yeah.
So Jerry Allen is responsible for Tap in the Vanguard,
yes.
and for it being part of this great series that the Jessie Norman. You did something for that series too recently, right?
Right. We were a part of the opening night with both Ron Carter, Terrence Blanchard's group, and James Carter's group as well.
Nice.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So in the background, we're listening to. This is from the Farrah Jasmine Griffin pile of Jerry Allen recordings. Yes, this is from The Gathering.
And this is another artist who performed in Miss Norman's honors. This is Vernon Reed, who's a good old friend back from, we were talking about M-Base, but the Black Rock Coalition.
Oh, yes, definitely.
And,
Living Color.
That's right. Yeah. And he was on that performance as well. Really, they just tore it up.
Mm.
So we were talking about hopefully doing something together again in the near future. So I thought, it'd be nice to take a listen to what we did how many years ago now.
Oh, goodness, was it 98? I was talking to someone earlier about this recording.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be really busy. You are busy. You're constantly busy.
I'm very grateful.
Exactly.
Very grateful.
It's a wonderful thing.
So to hear you a lot. I mean, the good thing about being in New York is that we get to hear Jerry.
Yes.
You know? And I was saying, when we were listening to the Andy Bay piece, you were talking about the difficulty of playing as slowly. And then we heard you with Betty Carter, and I said, well, you're playing slowly like that. And, could you talk a little bit about like what you think about playing at that tempo and its relationship to the blues? You were talking about that a little bit while we were off the air.
Oh, well, hearing Andy Bay and his mastership, it's a very special talent, excuse me, that what he has as a vocalist, as an artist, is just very unusual. And you hear like a Ray Charles would cut a call to tempo off like that, or Betty Carter would kind of tempo off like that, and hear Andy Bay, you know, and just a lot of space to trip up and fall and say something stupid or whatever. So it's like, just mastership to hear, you know, the blues and to feel that connection to, you know, the roots of the music in that kind of way, just personified in such a modern and just fresh way. You know, it just never ceases to be fresh when it's done with that kind of mastership.
So are you going to be in town performing any... I mean, you were just here last week, so it was like, yeah, so you're going to be here next week?
Well, not in town, but in Michigan, at University of Michigan, there's Donald Walden Week is being celebrated in Michigan. Donald is one of the really important saxophonists from Detroit and a great, great artist, and we just lost him 2 years ago. But the school is celebrating him. And Barry Harris will be there. So that's where I'll be.
Wonderful.
Next week.
Excellent. So, is there anything we should listen to take us away? Any Jerry Allen that you think you'd like to hear?
Well, wow, you know.
We have everything.
So you can pick from the Farrah, Jasmine Griffin pile of Jerry Allen.
Right, or the Joyce Jones pile.
I have the pile of, artists that Jerry Allen worked with or really likes, but.
Well, I'm open. Do you have that Vernon Reed up there?
Well, we're listening to a little
bit of it
now.
Oh, he's on there
now?
Okay.
Yeah. Is there a particular cut on here that we want? Actually, is there a website that you have?
Oh, I have. Well, yes, people can go to jerryallen.com.
Okay.
And actually, you
that's GERIALLEN. Mm-hmm. jerryallen.com.
I don't know if you would want to play the. I was just meant. Oh, you have it there. How about I Have a Dream, which is you can get a listen to Donna Walden on that, and then Professor George Shirley, the operatic tenor, is on this as well.
Okay. So
along with the chorus from Atlanta, Dwight Andrews' chorus.
Excellent. Well, thank you, Jerry Allen, for visiting WBAI. And Farrah Jasmine Griffin, welcome back.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for Sugar in My Bowl. It's, you know,
it's a great show.
A great show.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. You make it great. And this is indeed Sugar in My Bowl on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. And we're going to go out on I Have a Dream. Stay tuned. Something that I wanted to play from Evolution of the Groove by it's a posthumous Miles Davis recording. Carlos Santana's on it, and our guest of this evening, Jerry Allen. So let's take a listen to that. you're listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM. What you're listening to right now is, it was referenced earlier as Refractions. It actually turned out to be Jerry Allen Flying Toward the Sound, a solo piano excursion inspired by Cecil Taylor, McCoy Tyner, and Herbie Hancock. What you're listening to right now is Dancing Mystic Poets at Midnight. And before that, we heard Evolution of the Groove. It's About Time is the name of the cut, as mentioned. It actually includes Carlos Santana, Oludara, Jerry Allen, and Victor Bailey. This is a 2007 Sony Records release. Before that, we heard I Have a Dream from Timeless Portraits and Dreams by Jerry Allen. This is a 2006 Telok Records release, and as mentioned, it includes Donald Walden on tenor saxophone and the Atlantic Jazz Chorus. Dwight Andrews is the director. It also included the tenor George Shirley. And before that, we heard Stardust. It was going into Memories of You, but Stardust from Dropping Things by Betty Carter. The vocals, Betty Carter and Jerry Allen on piano. Before that, we heard Pretty Girl, The Star-Crossed Lovers, Andy Bay, Shades of Bay, with Jerry Allen on piano. This is a 1998 Evidence Records release. Before that, we heard Delilah from Bobby Hutcherson. Skyline is the name of the release. That's Bobby Hutcherson on marimba, Jerry Allen on piano, Christian McBride on bass, and Al Foster on drums, a 1999 Verve Records release. And before that, we heard the title cut from Timeless Portraits and Dreams, Jerry Allen, the 2006 Telok Records release. Coming up next is La Nueva Alternativa, right here on WBAI New York 99.5 FM.
And WBAI.org on the web.
Stay tuned.
Hello, bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.